DVD here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Nick Frazier hanging around here for a little bit as we're waiting on Adam Vingan and Derek Mason and Willie Donick as their midday show. Hey, D-Mace, how
What's
are you, man?
I'm here, man. I was waiting on Adam. I mean, I'm here. I'm ready to roll.
D-Mace, how was your weekend?
Hey, my weekend was wonderful, man. Just slow, how I like it. Unlike, I guess it is like the Titans. Because they started off really slow yesterday and managed to pick it up, you know, in the last quarter and a half and make it somewhat of a game. But other than that, man, it was a wonderful weekend. Wonderful weekend.
I'm here now. Hello, everybody.
Hey, what's going on, Adam?
We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. I am coming to you live from the remote Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios at my in-laws' house. It is the season. It is the season after all. So I appreciate Nick Frazier stepping in for a second as we get our bearings here. Willie Donick will be along momentarily. The Predators are back in action tonight. Their final game before the NHL's holiday break. They host the Carolina Hurricanes puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. So it is the holiday season, Derek, and I would like to present
of giving.
Yes, it is, and I would like to present all of our fine listeners with a present. The first day of Hanukkah is on Wednesday. Christmas Day, of course, is on Wednesday. And I would like to tell everybody out there that my gift to all of you is that you only have to watch 2 more Tennessee Titans football games this season. Happy holidays to all of you.
That's an early Christmas present right there.
Yes, absolutely. If you did not watch the game yesterday and you just happened to check the score and you saw the Titans lost 38-30, you might have assumed it was a close, entertaining game. Well, you would be wrong because the Titans were down 38-7 in the third quarter. And Derek, one thing we talked about last week was after Brian Callahan came out and said that his team wasn't soft, he passionately defended his team from such allegations. The one thing we said the other day was his team better go out there and compete on Sunday. Well, although they did make a late charge to make the final score more respectable, 38-7 was absolutely the worst possible thing that could happen to Brian Callahan after his comments at his news conference last week went viral. We talk about soft, and we talked about how soft can sometimes be confused with bad.
Yes.
But the one thing that we know is that when we're talking about a team's toughness, oftentimes we're talking about their defense. And yesterday, the Titans allowed 335 yards on the ground, which was the second most by a Titans/Oilers defense in franchise history. You have to go all the way back to 1961 for the last time that the Oilers-Titans franchise allowed more than 335 yards on the ground. And by the way, that was the AFL, not the NFL. The Dallas Texans had 398 rushing yards against the Houston Oilers on October 1st, 1961. So I do want to give the Titans partial credit, perhaps, for the fact that they did not just roll over after the Colts went up 38-7, but just an ugly, ugly performance, and not the performance, Derek, that you want to see from this team after their coach defended them from allegations that they were quote-unquote soft.
Yeah, it's not something that you wanted to hear or you wanted to see after what Brian Callahan said in the middle of last week, I think it was Wednesday, when the question was brought up, you know, was his team soft or not? And he did what was right. He defended his team. And what you expect to happen is for your team to come out with some fire. And they didn't. For whatever reason, they didn't. Now, that doesn't mean they're soft. They just didn't come out with any fire. There was a sense of urgency from the Indianapolis Colts. And it wasn't a sense of urgency the way we sort of think about it. When you see a team with that sense of urgency, it's like, okay, we're about to spread you out five wides, four wides, and we about to start going down the field because we know we got to get this game. No, they had a different sense of urgency. It was the physicality part. We have to show our dominance and our physicality early on in this game. And they knew the ramifications of this game, and the Tennessee Titans, for some reason, didn't. Again, for me, it's not necessarily about wins and losses. It's about how do you go out there and perform these last three games. And for about two quarters, the Indianapolis coach dominated them. They dominated the defensive line, and they dominated the offensive line. And they ran the ball on a team that prized themselves on stopping a run. So they took the physicality to you, and you didn't respond until it was too late. Now, throwing interceptions don't help, and penalties don't help. But, you know, you have to figure out how to stop a team from running the football, because they made it. There was no secret about what they were doing. No secret whatsoever. You picked up on that very early. They were not going to allow Richardson to throw the football, meaning the Indianapolis Colts. And I'm not talking about the Tennessee Titans. I'm hitting the Indianapolis Colts. They did not want Richardson to throw the football. They wanted to run the football and set a tempo and a tone. And they did exactly that. And for whatever reason, the Tennessee Titans chose not to reciprocate that type of energy. They waited until a quarter and a half was left in the game before they started to show life. And at that point, it was a tad bit too late. So, gosh, man, you just wonder, where did this come from? Because they've lost a few games bad this season. They have. And they got dominated in second halves bad this season, a few games. But I don't think anything looked like that. And when I mean look like that, I'm just talking about them not being able to stop the run. Because, hell, Indianapolis didn't do much in a pass game.
Hey, Brian Callahan, I'm sorry to interrupt, Derek. Yeah. Brian Callahan is at the podium addressing reporters. We'll hold that thought and take you there now.
At this season and the bodies available. And so I'll have more updates as the week goes on. I don't have as many today. But we got a handful of guys pretty banged up. So we'll see how the week goes. Go ahead.
Kelly, have you thought about making another switch at quarterback their stats are so similar? Do you need to see more out of Levis now?
No, I haven't made any decisions on that. I thought Mason, outside of the one interception at the end of the half, that was kind of his one poor decision of the game. That was one he'd like to have back. I thought he did a lot of other really pretty positive things in that game. You know, he was efficient, and he found ways to complete the ball, and he got the ball out of his hand, and those things were good. So it was a relatively good performance by Mason. You know, the other interception bounces off Tony's hands. You can't have it. I mean, we can't have those. Tony's got to come down with the ball. And then the last one was just there's 3 seconds left, last play of the game, seeing if he can get something. So thought that he had a good performance, but ultimately, you know, we needed a little bit more. Can't have the turnover in a critical spot. So that's sort of been our Achilles heel most of the season, is turnovers in big spots that swing momentums in games for us. So that part was disappointing, but I haven't made any decision on that.
Consider, I guess, if you are going to make a decision or not going to make them, what's kind of going through your mind on trying to decide where to go from here there?
You know, I just think that still the idea is to put ourselves in the best chance to win, and who gives us the best chance to do that. And again, I understand the stats are sometimes similar. The stats don't always paint the full picture either direction to one guy or the other at this point. So my goal is to try to put the best chance to win on the field for us, and we'll see what that looks like. But that's always going to be my focus, and my responsibility is to do that. So that's ultimately what I'm looking for and what the team is looking for.
How do you, I guess, explain or kind of make sense of the run defense like big discrepancy over the last several weeks. There's been two where it's just been really, really poor.
Yeah.
Two in between that have been pretty good. Is that hard to figure?
Yes and no. I mean, there's things that are revealing and telling in certain games. I mean, clearly the two games where the quarterback run game is a huge part of it changes how you play against those schemes. We've not done a great job handling those styles of offenses right now. It puts a different mentality in place when, you know, when you're playing a traditional run game, you know, you can attack and you can come downhill and you can do the things that we do pretty well. When the quarterback's involved in the run game, it changes a little bit of, you know, your ends have to play the quarterback. You have to be assignment driven. You have to have hats where they're supposed to be in terms of the RPO game and the quarterback. And so you have to be assigned correctly. It's a little bit less of go disrupt than it is where you got to be a little more on top of the details. And then again, when you start playing in some single high defenses, what happened to us in the game on both the long runs was, you know, you're in a single high defense and you have to fit it right. Otherwise, it ends up being it can be a big explosive play because you got so many people by the box. And so that's what happened on the one run, the Jonathan Taylor's. We're in a single high and we misfit the run, and the run gets to the second level. We don't make the tackle. And he gets out for 70, you know, and that's really, it was three big runs that happened in that situation that made that day look as bad as it did. We still fought. I mean, they ran the ball a ton of times, but the big ones is where we can't have. We got at least, again, even at the end of the day, get him on the ground for a 20-yard gain. Just don't give up a 70-yard touchdown, which, again, we didn't do a good enough job there. But there's some, we misfit some runs that led to some big runs, and that was just kind of the story of the game.
By the way, guys react to it. Well, it's just fits. We got to fit better. Well, you know, run stopping's actually pretty easy. Well, it's all 11 guys.
You don't have to yell. You can ask a question.
Thanks. Well, it's all 11 guys. It wasn't me. Well, it was better when I was on the field. It seemed like a lot of guys really had an easy time coming to terms with it. How do you feel about that?
I didn't see any of that, Paul. To be honest, I didn't watch it. I didn't see any of the player interviews or anything like that. But, I don't sense that from our players, what they say after games, and sometimes there's emotion involved in it. Don't feel like that is indicative of what I experience when I interact with them. Certainly, I'm as embarrassed as anybody that was what we put on the field, and I think they are too, that it's not obviously anywhere close to acceptable performance in the run game. I don't really know how they personally felt about every part of it, but collectively we had to play better in a run game than we did, and we didn't do enough things right, and that's how you get run for the amount of yards we got run on. So again, I can't comment to what they said after the game, but I just know that I would hope that they feel just as embarrassed as I do that that's a performance that we can't put out there.
One of the Colts players said something after the game along the lines of he heard one of your players say, well, this feels like a Dave Taylor is going to go for 300. Did you sense that kind of resignation from the defenders, that they just kind of thought that was going to happen?
No, I didn't. I can't comment to what they said, but we knew it was going to be a game where they're going to hand the ball off a bunch. The quarterback, that's what they've done the last handful of games too. It's sort of been their formula for success, is they run the ball a lot. The quarterback doesn't throw it a lot, and they're going to try to hand it to him as many times as possible. He's playing really well, both in the, you know, the quarterback's playing well in the run game, and Jonathan Taylor's been running the ball pretty fantastically over the last handful of games. So, you know, yeah, I mean, the expectation was that they were going to run the football a lot, and it wasn't anything that we didn't expect. We just didn't do a good enough job defending it.
Graham Williams, maybe being inexperienced late round rookies, were they having issues getting in the right spots and all?
They did some good things. They flashed some of their talent that they have, but you could see that they had some rookie moments in there as well. You know, Cedric was productive on the ball. I thought he showed some things that was good to see, but you saw their inexperience against that style of run game show up a little bit. And again, everybody on defense has to be better against the run game, and they're certainly a part of that process. And you do have to have 11 guys doing the right thing to stop the run, and guys taking care of their gaps and being where they're supposed to be, and we didn't have enough of that during the game.
I said that you didn't adjust, and that's they kind of referred the question back to you as to mm-hmm. why adjustments weren't made. Were you guys coaching for change in the way you were defending the run? And how did players respond?
Yeah, I thought they, you know, we tried a bunch of different things. You know, we were playing some man coverage against some of that RPO stuff, which is what you have to do against quarterback run game. We pressured it quite a bit. We played some middle field open. We sort of rolled through a bunch of different things to try to slow some of it down, and some of it worked pretty good. And again, it's the explosive runs that got out that made it look way worse. But yeah, I thought Denard did a good job trying to mix it up and change the look. So again, I can't speak to that necessarily if that's what they felt like. My door's open if they want to come express those things.
A month ago, you guys beat Houston, and on this day, everybody kind of was saying, feels like we've maybe turned a corner. We're looking for more consistency. Since then, bad rush defense and turnovers in Washington, can't score on offense against Jacksonville, turnover problem Cincinnati. Yeah. Yesterday is the worst rush defense ever. Why has there been no consistency, and how do you clog the very different things that have haunted you in the last month?
Yeah, that's what that's what we work every day to try to do is find a way to keep getting things better, fix mistakes. You know, they've all come in different ways and shapes and forms. It's not always the same thing. You know, it's something different comes up. You know, we end up throwing interceptions in bad spots. We've struggled to defend some of the quarterback run game in the last couple of weeks. It's been an up and down ride, and I think that's what we're trying to do our best to find more consistency. And that's what when I talk about is down to down consistency. It's drive to drive. It's game to game. We're just too up and down. We back up good performances on one side of the ball with a poor one on the other. We have a good performance here in one game and then a poor performance the next one. And so we're trying to find ways to continue our build consistency. And that's been our biggest challenge this year is playing at the level and the spot that you need to play every single play, every single game over the course of 17 games. And it's never going to be perfect. You're never going to get everything exactly the way that you want it. But we certainly have to do a better job than we've done. And it's been hard to fix every problem every week. And it's one shows up when you thought you kind of addressed it. It's been a challenge and we're continuing to work on it. We got two more weeks to try to keep coaching it.
Much of a concern, I guess, Brian, for you and the coaching staff. I mean, you guys have talked about, you know, the future and the promise and so forth, but only two more opportunities to show bottom line results. I guess are you concerned about the lack of opportunities left to show bottom line results?
I mean, I wish we had a whole lot more to show for what we've done this year. It's, you know, when you look back and the amount of work that we put in since we got here and the amount of effort that's gone into it, to have this particular moment be where we are is not at all what I would have expected to have it be as challenging as it's been. But it's certainly been challenging, and we've not done a good enough job of producing the way you have to produce on Sundays, even though I saw a lot of things that I believe in we do the right way, but we haven't won enough football games. And it's a bottom-line business, and we got to show progress, and we haven't shown enough. Would like to see more, and we got two more opportunities to do it. And as they say, you don't count the opportunities. You got to make the opportunities count. And we got to do that for the last 2 weeks.
Experience. How do teams build consistency when it's taking a while to get it going? And does it take this long in the past, or is this kind of the longest you've seen to get it going?
There's a lot of things that go into it, but yeah, I mean, I've been a part of, you know, a couple different year one processes, and they look, you know, pretty similar. Year one in Oakland, and I had a year one in Cincinnati, and you know, you're fighting through all the same things you got to fight through, and you got to keep improving the coaching. You got to keep improving your roster. You got to keep building the whole process. And I think that there's a lot of things we've done well. Enough of them don't show up outwardly, and that's kind of been the frustration. Is the performance on Sundays, has it matched what the preparation looks like, what the energy looks like? The disappointing thing is, I thought we had one of our best Friday practices in terms of energy, execution, like on top of all the things you got to be on top of. And then it doesn't translate, you know, to start the game, or at least that first half, it gets away from us. So I think the biggest issue we have right now, though, is that, you know, we lead the league in turnovers. I mean, it's that part's, you're going to lose a whole lot of games turning the ball over at the rate we've turned it over. You know, I think we're, what do we have, 30, 31 turnovers or something like that. I mean, that's insanity. So, yeah, it's going to make it really hard. And that's where the last two games have gotten away from us. We've turned the ball over twice in two straight games in the waning minutes of the half. And it turns into, you know, we could have gone in at 17-7 in the halftime, and it looks a little different. And all of a sudden it's 24, and then they get the ball back, and it's, 31. And that's how you lose games in this league. And if you turn the ball over and put yourself in bad spots and they capitalize on it, it makes it really difficult. So I would say the biggest issue we have right now is the turnover problem. And that's you want to build consistency and you want to do things better, and you got to make sure you take care of the football.
Brian, among the changes that you've made that have worked, it looks like the last couple of weeks, you've embraced running the football down to the goal line. And I think your red zone numbers have gotten a lot better in the process.
Yeah, we're 7-for-7 in the last 2 weeks, which is really positive. We've run the ball a bunch. We've used our goal line package. It's worked out well for us. Yeah, I think that part's been good. We've sort of shifted and pivoted and started doing more of that, and it's paid dividends for us. Yeah, I'm that part I am pleased about. I'm pleased about how we've played on third down too over the last handful of weeks. I think we're right around hovering around 50% on third down, which is pretty dang good. So there is things that we're doing well, but again, not enough of it's contributing to winning football games yet.
Going back to the quarterback situation, if you stick with Mason and Will doesn't see any more action this year, are you concerned psyche-wise for him that his last performance would be his worst of the year?
No, I'm not. I think that's part of playing NFL quarterback. There's a lot of stuff that's hard about playing the position. That's how things go, and you got to find a way to bounce back and rebound, and that's the expectation.
Was there any one play, I guess, that led to the switch of NPF and Ajuku yesterday?
It was the sack on the third down that we had a chance. As Mason was working back, and felt like it needed to change in that moment. He had a couple things that weren't great that we just felt like it was. Make a change and see what else we can do with the other guy.
That was Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan addressing reporters at St. Thomas Sports Park. We will react to what he had to say coming up next. You can get in on the conversation as well. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tune into 93.3 FM. Totally Hits Nashville tonight. For MTSU men's basketball, the Blue Raiders take on number one Tennessee in Knoxville. Tip-off is at 6 with the pregame beginning at 5:30. Coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. Tune into 102.5, 106.3 The Game this Friday for Vanderbilt football, presented by Prince's Hot Chicken. The Commodores will take on Georgia Tech in the Birmingham Bowl, with pregame beginning at 1 o'clock and kickoff at 2:30. Coverage is also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. We just heard from Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan. Titans lose 38-30 to the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. And Derek, I want to continue the conversation about the rushing defense, or lack thereof. There was a statistic I saw about this game that was most concerning to me, and that was the fact that the Colts averaged roughly 4.4 yards before contact per carry yesterday, which was the most the Titans have allowed in a game this season. It really did feel that whether it was Jonathan Taylor or Anthony Richardson breaking off a big run, it really felt as if though the Titans were putting up little resistance in doing so. But with all of the big numbers, 335 rushing yards allowed total, Jonathan Taylor, 218 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns, a 70-yard touchdown on the first play of the second half, all of those things. The fact that the Colts averaged more than 4 yards before contact per carry, which is a season high for the Titans, that really stood out to me as something quite concerning.
Yeah, and it should be, especially for a defense that prides themselves on stopping a run first and foremost. They didn't do much of that yesterday against the Indianapolis Colts. Now, mind you, they were without both of their inside linebackers, their starters, and then the backups end up getting hurt, I believe, after that. You know, you had Gibbons who got hurt last week, so you got to throw another guy in there. They ended up the game with, I think, James Williams and Cedric Gray playing linebacker for that team. And you're talking about playing significant minutes, not, you know, the garbage time at the end of the game. So when you don't have your two star linebackers and then their backups are hurt and you throw in, you know, guys that you didn't intend on playing, this is what happens. Now, that's no excuse because they had their front four, Jeffrey Simmons and the guys, and they still weren't able to do much. You know, stopping him when Jeff was out there. I know Tavondre Sweat ended up getting poked in the eye, so he was out a bit of the game. But when he came back in, it seemed like the defensive line started to get a tad bit better, but still they couldn't stop anyone. But this is what happens, again, when your team from the start isn't good, your roster isn't good, and then you have injuries along, especially along your defensive front when you're playing a team like the Indianapolis Colts, who basically, you know, they basically have a two-headed monster, either with Jonathan Taylor or Richardson running the football. And if you're not stout up front to stop the run, it's going to be a long day. And if those linebackers can't scrape and make tackles, because that's what you put those big 300-pounders in there for, is to clog up two or three blockers and for those linebackers to scrape and make tackles. And yesterday, they took bad angles. They were missing tackles. And even when they did make a tackle, the running back was still able to get a couple of more yards after, you know, the first initial contact. So I can't see it getting any better for this team, honestly, because, again, they have no depth, and guys that you're asking to play now aren't guys that you were dependent on when the season started. I went through a situation like this, you know, with a secondary that was depleted. And I remember the game with Kansas City put up over 40 points against our secondary. We were trying to stop them, but we didn't have the horses out there to stop them. Why? Because both of our corners were injured, and then their backups ended up getting injured. Then you throw in guys that you hadn't depended on during the season or who hadn't played much, and that's what happens. And that's exactly what happened with the Tennessee Titans. But yet and still, again, regardless, that front, they should have done a better job, because if they would have got the tackler down with the initial tackle, Indianapolis Colts wouldn't have that many yards rushing.
Eric is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eric, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yes, first of all, I want to wish you both a Merry Christmas, all every listeners and everybody out there, very, very Merry Christmas, and hope you enjoy the holidays.
Thank you. Same
thank
to you,
you
too,
Eric.
Guys, before I get to the game yesterday, one quick thing about, I know one of the things, of course, you keep hearing everybody say, oh, we got to clean house and, you know, get rid of everybody's stuff. And I get it. I'm not going to get on here and argue whether or not you're or not, because I just don't know about these things, and I'm no expert, because that's the natural reaction. But I just don't think they're going to do that, because you're, of course, already paying Robinson. You're already still paying Mike Vrabel. Do you really want to get rid of enough staff and bring on another staff and be paying all these people? So I don't know if they're going to do that or not. I, you know, they could do that, but I just would be surprised. Probably wouldn't be shocked, but I'd be surprised if they do that. But as far as the game yesterday, a couple of things, guys. I, too, was surprised and disappointed by the defensive play that they got pushed around, because we've been able to corral Jonathan Taylor, but we certainly did able to do that yesterday. But I think definitely he wanted to prove the point. It kind of reminded me like the Tennessee-Ohio State game. There's a lot of times when fans are all over either a player or a team because of their previous performance the week before, they usually come out strong, especially everybody was all over Jonathan Taylor for dropping the ball for across the goal line. And I think certainly he was motivated by that. And I'm not saying this was the reason that we won or lost the game, guys, but I think one of the turning points, guys, this was a major turning point, was when we were up 7-0, we get the pick, and then we missed the field goal, and the Colts came right down and scored a touchdown. That's a huge turning point in the game. And the last thing, guys, and then I'll get off, and I kind of thought it was kind of – I chuckled because of the fact that one of the things, of course, that everybody's been talking about is whether or not Calvin Ridley is the number one receiver. He caught the touchdown pass for us to go up 7-0. And I know a lot of people around here said he's not a number one receiver. They don't believe he's number one receiver. But, of course, I don't know, and I'm sure you're watching the game, but the two announcers, I guess it was in the third or fourth quarter, were saying, yep, Calvin Ridley is definitely the number one receiver. And I kind of got a chuckle out of that after everybody around here was saying they didn't think a number one receiver. And you know, make of that whatever you will. I'm not going to get into that, but it's my thoughts on yesterday's game. Guys, y'all take care. Merry Christmas again to you. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks. Thank you, Eric. And let's address that first question, Derek. And I believe Willie has joined us as well.
Yes, he has.
Hello, guys.
Hello,
good to talk
Willie.
To you guys. Yes. There
are a lot of questions, of course, about the job security of Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon, Chad Brinker, and Brian Callahan was asked during his news conference about, you only have two games left to show some results. And those are certainly big games for him. And Willie, the point I was making to Derek before you joined us, and I would love your thoughts on this, is after everything that happened last week with the soft comments, the last thing the Titans needed to do was what they ended up doing yesterday, falling down 38-7, allowing a Titans record 335 yards on the ground, second most in franchise history when you include the Oilers in that as well. Just the timing of this performance could not have been worse for Brian Callahan after he stuck his neck out and defended his players last week.
Yeah, I was hoping for a little bit more inspired play. And I will give them credit for making a run at the end. And I just don't understand how they gave up about the easiest pitch and catch on a 3rd and 8, where I was thinking, I don't even think the Colts will pass here. I thought they would run.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think they would have the guts to let Richardson, whose completion percentage is under 50%, even throw the ball. And if they get the ball back there, they have a legitimate chance with 3 timeouts to go down and see if they can pull a miraculous comeback. So the final result was better than it was going to look while we were all texting each other when it was 38-7 going, oh, man. After you sort of roll the dice and kind of back your team and say, guys, play for me. Mm-hmm. We got 3 games left. I got your back. I'm behind you. And then to see that, to get down 38-7, where there were moments where I was like, man, do I really see the fight in the battle level that I wanted to see here? That was concerning, to say the least. So I think the rally at the end did mask it a little bit. But I'd have to say, if I'm Brian Callahan, I walk out of there going, come on, guys. I had your back. Now, where are you guys? Even though with the injuries, it's not uncommon to see games like that. It's interesting to follow the teams that are going to be picking high and what are they bringing to the table in the final few weeks of the season. You know, the Giants are a complete – They have nothing that they're bringing to the table. They don't have a chance to win a game. I do feel like the Titans at least look like, for parts of a game, like a decent, tough out for a while. And then something always happens to where you're like, wait a minute, what happened? They were like at the end of the first quarter, like Eric was saying, you're up 7-0. You get a stop. You get an interception. You're making another drive. At the end of the first quarter, you're like, hey, right in this thing. And the next thing you know, you're way behind. Like, what happens? I don't understand.
Well, you miss a field goal, and then they come down and score, and then you throw an interception.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
they score that, again, and then now the game is completely out of your hands. What I am
– Don't you think Mason Rudolph – he's costing himself a little money he's showcasing – these are the things that the announcers were talking about. Like, you're playing for your job on this team or another team – next year. So if you have a bad performance, like, you can't, it's costing you down the road in your career.
But I don't even think it was Mason Rudolph. I think Mason Rudolph, aside from the first interception, I don't know who he was throwing it to.
Yeah.
Maybe thought the receiver was coming in and sitting. I have no idea. But either way, that was a legitimate blown assignment by the quarterback. But beside that play, I think he did a damn good job. I don't think he was the problem. Because when that offense stayed on schedule, when they didn't get penalties, when they didn't do anything that was, you know, detrimental to themselves, Mason Rudolph did a great job. The pass to Pollard should have caught that pass. That's no way, no how on Mason Rudolph. And then the one at the end of the game, any quarterback would have thrown that pass just to try to make a play. So if you look at Rudolph's play as a whole, Rudolph played winning football. The defensive line didn't play winning football.
And when you allow a team to run the football like that, and then you have those mistakes, I put that first one on Mason Rudolph. But when you have a when you miss a field goal, they score. Then you come right back with a minute or something left, and you throw an interception. You're not good enough to overcome all of that stuff. Even as good as Mason Rudolph played, aside from the one interception, because that's all I'm giving, one interception. But beside that one interception, and he played winning football, no one else played winning football around him, especially on the defense. And that's what Brian Callahan talked about in his presser. He said, listen, we play good on one side, then the other side don't play good. They play good, we don't play good. There's just no consistency across the board. And then you miss a field goal. I get it. He's a rookie kicker. But, hell, he has that's his job. He got to make 56-yard field goals. He made one in preseason. You should be able to make this one indoors, no pressure. Kick the football. It's not a game-winning field goal. So, to me, when they do something good on one side, they end up imploding on the other side. And that's basically what happened yesterday.
But they're playing like most of the teams
that are competing
for the first three slots. It is interesting to watch. Like, somebody had to win between the Raiders and the Jags. I was the guy that's crazy enough. I'm watching the red zone. And, of course, it's fantasy playoffs, so yes. I'm watching my fantasy teams. But I'm also keeping an eye on, okay, who's going to win this game? Because the Raiders winning, it's going to help move the Titans up maybe a notch. We're talking about maybe the third pick here. Possibly, if it plays out a certain way, these next couple of games. And as we talked about with the Titans, they're going to play the Texans, who probably are going to be in a scenario where they don't really have any incentive to play people. They're probably going to take an opportunity to rest people. So this is going to be what it is for the next couple of weeks. And so this is what I'm wondering, Adam, going through Amy Adams' mind. You've got these games that are different than games of teams like even the Colts, who still mathematically are alive, right? That's different than teams that are out of it, trying to look at young guys. Like, how is Amy Adams viewing these games through her lens? What does she want to see as she tries to say, what changes do I want to make going forward? Do I want to take it down from the top, or am I going to be okay with this group going through an offseason?
And that's a good question, which we will answer on the other side. 615-737-1025. By the way, an update from our favorite website, tankathon.com. We have an update. The Titans are slated to pick fourth in the NFL draft behind the Giants, Patriots, and Jaguars. The Titans can move up by losing to the Jaguars this week. But the Titans are slated to pick fourth in the latest odds, according to our favorite website, tankathon.com. 615-737-1025. Hey, tune into 1025, 1063, The Game for the Transperfect Music City Bowl on Monday, December 30th, 1 week from today. Chase and Big Joe will have pregame coverage starting at noon, and kickoff is set for 1:30. Music City Bowl coverage is presented by Hi-Fi Bots.
I was hoping about it a lot. Hoping about everybody in this locker room. In 3-12, I didn't expect this. I didn't expect this. Coming out of camp, like, feel like we had a great camp. I didn't expect this. And like I said, we fought. I would say, like, that shows kind of like the fight in this team. And like I said, we at this point, it's like, what are we really playing for? And I said a couple weeks ago, like, right now it's like we're playing for and we're building for next year. If I see guys want to quit, I don't want to be a teammate. So the way we showed at the end of the game, you know, the fight we had, you know, we were down, like, I mean, what, 20-some points, 30-some points, and being able to come back and down eight, having a chance. All we needed a third down stop. We almost had a chance to win that game. So it's tough, and like I said, these guys just got to keep fighting and finish these last two strong.
That was Tennessee Titans defensive end Jeffrey Simmons. After the game yesterday, Titans lose 38-30 to the Indianapolis Colts, their record dropping to 3-12. According to the Tennessean, the Titans are guaranteed to finish three consecutive seasons with worse records than the year before for the first time in franchise history. So from 7-10 to 6-11 to no more than 5-12. So for the first time in franchise history, three consecutive years of declining records. Willie Donick, Derek Mason,
that's
Adam.
That's fairly improbable, isn't it? Like that, I would have to think that that is unusual. That that would be the first time.
I would have to. I would have to assume. I mean, that's
that doesn't seem like something that could never happen. Like other franchises, don't you think that would have happened somewhere, like a couple times, if you've been around for as long as they've been around? That's an interesting stat. I don't know what it really means, but like teams.
Well, they've
have
gotten
bad
worse
years.
Three. They've gotten worse. They've gotten worse 3 years
right,
in
but,
a row.
Right, when, but they were fairly. They were a good team when this started. They were 7-3 and slipped to 7-10. So, but I just
yes.
I don't know. Everybody's looking for ways
I know
to stick stick the knife in. I get it. It pinpointing
there
every
are only
thing
so many.
Say,
well,
they're bad.
There
used
to
they're
be
not a good team.
There, yeah.
There's only so many ways
used
you
to
can
be
say a, it. Let's we can analyze it. They're not good. I get
there
it.
Used to be a there used to be a bit that Stephen Colbert would do. He wouldn't backstab. He would front stab.
Front stab.
That's what's happening to the Tennessee Titans.
There is
right
a lot
now.
Of that's
we're
a
not
good
back,
point.
We're
that's
not
a good description of what's
Tennessee
going
Titans.
On. There's
we're
a lot of front
stabbing.
Stabbing.
Yes. There's a lot of front stabbing. Hold still. Front stab. That's what he used to say. So that's what's happening. There's a lot of front stab.
Good call.
Front stabbing happening with the Tennessee Titans. But either way, let's talk about the question you presented, Willie, before the break. If you're Amy Adams Strunk and you're watching this, you're watching the Titans yesterday fall behind 38-7 to the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are running wild all over your defense. And you're sitting there. There are two games left. You're evaluating everything. Is there anything that Brian Callahan and this team, and by extension, Rand Carthon, because he's who put the team together. I mean, what does she need to see over these next two games to make her feel as if though Callahan and Carthon are the right people to move this process forward after such a disastrous season?
One, I think, you know, she just needs to see them continuing to fight. If she knows anything about football, and I know she does, she will know that this roster is not good. That she will know that the team that is out on the field isn't a good team. She will know all the injuries that they've occurred over the last couple of weeks. She will know that, you know, two of her inside linebackers went down. All she wants to see, at least if I was her, is to see continued fight out there. If we win, great. That's just icing on cake if we win. But I want to see a team that's going to go out there and fight. The first half of that game, I didn't see too much of that. I saw a good first drive, and after that I saw a bunch of mistakes and a bunch of missed tackles. But in the second half, I saw a team that continued to fight. However y'all want to frame it, or sort of, you know, put it together, this team continued to fight. I've seen teams that have been down that many points and the lead just gets larger no matter what defense the opposing team is playing. This team continued to fight. Fight so much so that they had an opportunity at the end to put themselves in a position to potentially win the game if they can get a third down stop, and they didn't do it. But what she did see in them, and many people may disagree with me, the hell with it, she saw fight in this team. This team continued to fight. No matter how you look at it, this team ended up scoring 20-something points and making it and putting themselves in a position, if they get a stop, they can go down and potentially tie the game. Would they have done it? I don't know. But at least they gave themselves a chance. Now, they dug themselves a deep hole. But that team continued to fight. They continued to play because you don't come back from that deficit if you are not a team that's fighting. I'm telling you that from experience. You don't.
I do think there was a point, Adam, where I was – if I'm Rand Carthon and I'm Brian Callahan and I'm just thinking of that question, how is Amy seeing this? When it's 38-7,
it's not good.
I'm thinking, oh, boy. Have my guys just laid down? What's going to happen? Are they going to score 50? You know, that's the kind of thing that really has the front stabbing you know, you have not just one or two front staff, but you got a lot of people.
Two on each side.
Right, right. So I would have been relieved if I'm those guys saying, okay, at least we kept playing. And we did make the people in the stadium a little bit nervous. That's better than losing 52-7 or something like that, right? And you have to see it. Now, let's look at it last year. The last game of the year, they ruined the Jaguars' season by playing a great game on the last day of the season. It was a great going-away party for Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and it was like the old hurrah. Hey, we got one more. That didn't affect their decision on Mike Vrabel at all. So I don't know what is going on in her head, but I just think, to me, if I'm the owner and I just made this big commitment to Brian Callahan and I moved on from Mike Vrabel, who was pretty entrenched and a pretty big reputation around the league, that was a gutsy move. And to do a 180 and scrap the whole thing after 1 year of a coach and really one plus year of a GM, that is not allowing any kind of foundation to be built. So it had to be pretty egregious for me to make changes. That's just me. That's not going to keep a lot of people from having an opinion that they're out on this group. But I just, like, the teams that are out of it right now, where the Titans are in the standings, usually about one, maybe two, play surprisingly well. Like yesterday was the Panthers. And now the Titans will be picking maybe ahead of the Panthers, where I didn't think that was possible. But they pulled off a big win yesterday against a team that needed to win in the Cardinals. They were fighting for their season, and the Panthers beat them. The Titans really won't have a chance to play a game like that. They have another team like the Jaguars, or somebody has to get a win. And then the Texans, who are going to be looking at the playoffs and resting guys. So what can you really find about your team in those two games other than just play hard?
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. They lose, again, 38-30 to the Indianapolis Colts. A rough game for the Titans' run defense. We'll get back into that over the course of the program. Teron Davenport will join us at 1 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on everything Titans as well. But coming up next, it is time for part 2 of our Silly Underdogs Bowl Draft. We picked our first 8 bowl games a couple of weeks ago. We will pick the remainder of our bowl games. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.